Good day and welcome to Sarah and T, the Professional Vacation Rental Managers Podcast, coming to you from the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
And from the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. I'm Sarah Bradford from Winter Park and Steamboat Springs.
And I'm Tim Cafferty from the Outer Banks of North Carolina and Sandbridge in Virginia. Together, we bring you the first podcast focused solely on professionally managed vacation rentals, both domestic and abroad.
In the next 30 minutes, we hope you will join us on our journey as we dive into issues affecting folks like us, the professional vacation rental manager, allowing you to run your business more effectively, make more money, and most importantly, have fun doing it.
We're back and better than ever. I'm Tim.
And I'm Sarah. And today on our show, we are wrapping up our seminar series, Tim. We have our final, and maybe it'll be a grand finale guest. We have Brian Moffitt from Royal Destinations, and we're so happy to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So tell us about Brian Moffitt. We have the benefit of a video call that we're on here, recording, of course, because we just do the audio portion, but we see beautiful sunshine and Florida skies behind you. So tell us about who you are, how you got there, and what you're all about.
It's easy to take Florida for granted. Very blessed down here. Our market is 30A. We manage about 135 homes at the moment, exclusively on 30A, which is about midway between Destin and Panama City. So we are a single family home market. A lot of upper end inventory here and a lot of repeat travelers. Just draw an 8-hour drive to ring around our area, and those are our target market. Atlanta, Birmingham, New Orleans, Nashville, everything in between. A lot of repeat guests down here and a lot of people just looking to get away, especially this year, from hustle and bustle of home, wherever that happens to be, and get away to the beach, enjoy some family time, and just see some sunshine.
Brian, how long have you been in business and how did you get into this? So easy, exciting business we're in here.
It's almost like an inside joke, right? When we all just drop a little bit of sarcasm about how easy this is. We all love it, right? We all have to be passionate about what we do or we're not going to be successful doing it. My background is in development, operations management. I've got some business partners that their background is in construction, high-end home builders. One day we were all sitting around and we said, you know what would be a natural extension of what we do is to get into this crazy world of managing high-end homes as well. We recognized that at that point in time, there wasn't really anybody that really focused on the highest end of the market in our area. And we just kind of struck out and said, hey, we're going to serve the high end of the market. We're going to try and raise the benchmark for what we do here and been working at that ever since. I guess it's been 7-8 years now.
Does that mean that you were building high-end homes and you guys decided to build some vacation rentals that you own? Or was it more you were building the high-end homes and then these owners were saying, now who should we use for vacation rental? And you were saying, wait, I can do that.
A little of both. We don't manage anything that we own intentionally. We never want, not saying it's wrong if you do, so a lot of people do, but we never want to compete against our homeowners. For us, it was more of a relationship thing, spending, you know, upwards of 2 years building, furnishing, turning over a home. And just like you said, an owner saying, hey, well, what now? And it wasn't about losing the business to a competitor, a potential competitor. It was more about trusting, having a homeowner, having a relationship that we were trying to trust them with somebody else. So like I said, just a natural extension of trying to take care of our client from start to finish.
And the cool thing about that is when something happens with the house, you can't blame the builder.
It just gets more complicated there.
I want to know more about the luxury high end. You're an ops guy. You just said it. I love your ops guys.
Right.
So you must have a checklist. You must have some criteria. What makes it a luxury home in your view?
So when we're taking on a new home, there's three primary criteria. The first of which is it needs to be consistent with the rest of our portfolio. It needs to look like it belongs on the website to use really a superficial benchmark. Next is that it needs to financially perform. Doing what we do in the segment of the market, which we do, is very expensive. We've got a lot of overhead, a lot of staff. We truly believe if we're going to do the job the right way, then we need to invest the resources into being able to pull it off. We can't just say we're going to do it. We need to actually be able to do it. We got to find the right homes. Third is the relationship with the homeowner has to be right. You know, I think as we all know, nobody really likes to say it, but there's a lot of homeowners out there that we get 3 months in and we wonder if we really want to continue that relationship. So we try and do our best weeding that out in the front end. as opposed to having those difficult conversations down the road.
Well, I want to seize that. Gosh, don't we all want to know what happened to that person we were interviewing in the initial, and then they turn into something else, Godzilla, 3 months in? Do you have some good questions or some good ideas for us to try to find those people in advance and make sure we don't get into those bad situations?
I wish I did. All I can suggest is when you see the flags, whatever they happen to be, don't hold on to it too long. It rarely gets better before it gets worse.
That's great. Great pullover moments there. You look for consistent look, that's the level, financially performs, and the relationship is right. That's excellent advice.
And watch for red flags.
Okay, we got to get into our seminar questions, but I have one more about your business. And that is the higher end topic. Tim, of course, got into operations about that. But I want to talk about marketing because I'm in higher end and there's people that are in high end. I don't know how high your high end goes. But when you try to market that, you don't have to give any trade secrets away. But what has been your secret to success for others in other areas who are trying to also go with that really top end client?
In a weird way, the high end is almost easier than the everyday. And I think, at least for our market, it's scarcity. Very, very high end homes, whether it's terms of location or size or fit and finish, you name it, whatever makes that home high end is part of also what makes it very unique. Those homes in a weird way are almost easier to market just because the supply of them is lower. Really the challenge, I think, and what kind of makes or breaks you as a marketer is how you market the mid-range, right? You have a neighborhood where there's 200 homes and they're all 4 bedrooms and they all have a pool and they all look really the exact same at the end of the day. That's where you can make or break yourself is how you take care of those.
I agree. We just put a new property on the market and it's gorgeous. And I thought, oh my gosh, during COVID, how are we going to book this last minute for ski season? And I think it's priced high. It's not pricing 7 bookings and couple weeks. So it speaks for itself in a way.
All right. So getting into those questions, Brian, you indicated to us before we started this, you have listened and heard some of the questions we've asked. I think you may be especially in tune to this first question I have, and that is, given COVID and people's concerns, what sort of things have you done to ensure quality control in your cleans and your maintenance interaction to make sure that people are comfortable when they're coming to stay at your spot down there, Royal Destinations?
That's a great question. And it's one that a lot of people put a lot of effort into, ourselves included. I think the thing that has set companies up for success, though, was their foundation of quality prior to COVID happening. I think we found ourselves, our standards were already relatively high. We found that it was pretty easy to take that extra step, develop a reputation of consistency. Our guests knew, probably have almost 30, 35% repeat guests. So a lot of our guests knew what to expect, knew that the standards would be well in advance of coming down. And it was easier for us to do so. I think the challenge is you haven't built that foundation to begin with. It's harder, especially in this market right now, COVID going on, to recover. I wish I had good advice there. I know that's not good advice. That's just from perspective.
Well, maybe your advice is set up your company correctly from the start, and then when tragedy hits, maybe you can survive it better.
Certainly makes it easy.
My question is, what is the best idea you've had lately?
Oh, that's a great question. Ironically, the best idea we've had this year was to undo a bad idea that we had earlier this year. Part of our core philosophy is always strive to improve. So largely paraphrasing here, but we want to find the best way to do everything that we can do. And if we feel like we're not doing it the best way, take that extra step and figure out what it can be. So that leads to a lot of experimentation, leads to trying a lot of things. We'll try anything once. Part of our process there is that we want to give everything 100% chance for success. We never want to get to the end of the year and say, you know, if only we'd thrown a little more money at that, if only we put another person behind it, you know, gave it more attention, maybe this would have worked better. We're going to try everything that we do when it's a new idea, 110%. And that way, if it doesn't work, we know it was a dumb idea and we move on, right? So we're quick to try new things. We're quick to punt. It's a quicker evolution, I guess, how we look at it. You know, you can slowly go year over year and see if you can improve things, or you can continually do it throughout the year and hopefully find yourself in a better position at the end of the year.
So we're all wanting to know, What was the idea you undid?
We, being a relationship-based company, we have what we call our home liaisons. They're property managers, as we all know them. It's kind of a cutesy name for property manager, but there's also some intentionality behind what they do. And that's truly that they're a liaison between the homeowner and the home and the guest, the homeowner and the guest. They knit everything together. They're kind of the hub of the wheel, so to speak. That's great if we want to develop fantastic relationships with our homeowners. Our home liaisons manage on average 14 to 15 homes. And that way they can have great relationships with their homeowners. So what we found over the years, though, it's a very highly leveraged operational style, right? So when we have a great home liaison, everything works very well. If something is amiss, somebody isn't as strong as we thought, then the relationship isn't as good as we thought. So we tried to build some teams between a property manager and what we called an owner liaison and kind of a maintenance tech, and delineate some duties, have a division of duties between the team. And we found that all that did was create some new problems, right? So we saw some, we created some new ones. We just moved the leverage from one point to another. And we realized, hey, at the end of the day, if we're a relationship company, let's do what we do best and let's have one-on-one relationships with our homeowners. And we've largely gone back to that format.
Being in ops, you know, you need that repeatable process, right? That's very dependable and not specific to a person. So good on you, as I haven't said in a long time. It's terrific. So I want to talk to you about revenue management. You've got these high-end properties. You talked about the luxury end. And you know, we've talked about a lot of the tools that are out there. We won't mention one particular one who's gotten air on every one of our podcasts, but I'll mention the others, that Price Labs and Key Data, STR, AirDNA, Rented, etc. Are you using a tool like that? And how has it worked for you?
We've experimented with a number of different tools and had success with some and had some challenges with others. I think the one that's been discussed repeatedly during this series, ironically, is one that didn't work very well for us. And I think
finally. Different. Go for it.
We're talking about Beyond Pricing. Good guys, good program, good platform. I think it works for some people. It didn't work for us, primarily for the reason that because our homes are higher end and because they're unique, we felt like at the end of the day, we are the only ones that really know our homeowners, that really know our homes. That, you know, I think they get our market. And if we were selling, 100 three-bedroom boxes in the sky in a big tower somewhere, I think some of those products out there can do a good job of automation. We found our success, though, in data and analytics. So our process is very, very hands-on. We look at not just every home, but we look at every week of unsold inventory weekly as a team. We have a 20-person revenue management meeting, if you can believe that. The entirety of our property management team, the entirety of our reservations team, the entirety of our marketing team, our biz dev people are in there, and myself. And it may be a little overkill, but at the end of the day, like I said, we know our homes, we know our homeowners, we know our guests. And if we really want to make the best decisions, we need to be utilizing the data at hand. We use Key Data. We're Key Data subscribers. They were actually started in the backyard of our market here. It's been a fantastic platform for us. For years, we worked hard at revenue management. We'd roll up our sleeves and get in there and create all this information and make what we thought were common sense decisions. Now, utilizing Key Data, we're able to do that much, much faster. But it also provides some validation for us. What we thought was the right thing to do in years past, now we're finding that we're able to back up with the data. So it helps us know that we're making the right decisions. It also helps us with our homeowners, right, to give some justification to why we're doing what we're doing. Every homeowner likes to second guess, right, play Monday morning quarterback at the end of the season and say, why'd you sell this so cheaply, or why didn't this get sold? And now it allows us to say, well, here's why we did what we did, and here's why it was in your best interest. So all that to say, that was a long answer, but I think it's the data, for at least for us, that is key rather than automation.
And to your point previously, talk about a personal relationship with the owner. That must really give you a great competitive advantage with your owners to say, I have a 20-person team, and we've talked about your house X amount of times. That's really good stuff, Brian.
Yeah. So your approach is mine, and it's one I don't hear very often. So I'm so glad you're saying that you're doing what I do, except I don't have 20 people in there. Can you just shed a little light on what that meeting's like? Like, who prepares for it? How do you walk through it every week? What are some key points that you make sure happen in that meeting?
So all the information is largely prepared by our marketing team and our reservations manager. They're the ones kind of with their finger on the pulse of what's going on in the marketplace. Most of the team that's in there is the biggest team in there are property managers. And again, our philosophy is that if we're doing this for our homeowners, we need to understand our homeowners' goals and objectives for booking their home, for revenue, right? Meeting those. Some homeowners, they want you to book it, right? It's an investment. Some homeowners say, hey, I'm going to retire here and I want nothing less than a premium rate. I'd rather it sit empty. And it's our job to understand that. But part of the reason we have our property managers in there, it's not just for decision making, but it's also an educational opportunity. If our home liaisons are truly our face of our company and our primary point of interface between ourselves and our homeowners, they need to know what they're talking about. And sometimes it's easy, right, to fake it when you're talking about revenue management. Sometimes you get in front of that really savvy homeowner that wants to know everything. And you need to know what you're talking about. So we truly believe that our property managers spending time in these meetings helps them, equip them for having these difficult conversations with our owners.
Good. Thank you. You know, there's nothing better than when you pick up the phone and talk to an owner that you didn't know was going to call. And they mentioned something about the booking that got canceled or how next month looks. And you go, yeah, I was just looking at that. And I saw the third week isn't booked. They're like, dang, girl. Right? My next question for you is, I can't help but bring it up today because very recently, the good old Airbnb has gone public and their stock price so far is skyrocketing. By the time we go live, maybe it'll still be skyrocketing. Maybe it'll be plummeting. You can decide what you want to happen there. I'm trying to look at it as a positive. What do you think about OTAs? What's your approach to OTAs? And also, what do you think about Airbnb going public?
Yeah, lots to unpack there. I think we all love and hate our OTAs, right? Relationships with our OTAs. Some are some are good in some markets. Some are challenging in others. Our market is a Vrbo market. We would be remiss not to have our inventory distributed across Vrbo, and we've got a very good relationship with them. We went through some highs and lows over the last couple of years. I think we all called it matchback. Them wanting to collect for what they called off-platform bookings at the time. And there was a lot of backlash over that. And what's very much impressed me with Vrbo over the years is that they took that to heart. They built a team, right, between Lisa Chen and John over there. You know, they've kind of doubled down in building relationships with our industry, getting to know our teams, getting to know our industry and what works. And I think that we're all better off for that. The challenge with some of the other OTAs, Airbnb being one of those, is I don't get that sense of cooperation from them. And I think that's the common denominator. I think that the OTAs that are really going to be successful working with professional property managers are going to be the ones that want to spend the time to get to know and understand our businesses, our market, and want to work together in partnership. And honestly, I don't get that sense with Airbnb, for better or for worse. I think they're good at what they do and focusing on individual hosts. But I think if they want to take things to the next level, it's going to include our industry. And I haven't seen that out of them. I hope to. We haven't had much success with them up to this point for a lot of the reasons that we all know. But I hope they'll come and see that one day and start to turn that corner.
Hard to believe, Sarah, that it was almost exactly a year ago on episode 62, we had Jeff Hurst on. Well, it seems like an eon ago. But to that point, specific answers here. How dependent are you on Vrbo? Give me a percentage in just round terms. And are you happy with that?
Our goal is, and these are very round numbers, but our practical goal for booking each year is one-third of our bookings each year from OTAs. Of course, Vrbo being probably 90, maybe 95% of our bookings from OTAs. One-third being repeat guests, and then the final third being our direct marketing efforts. And in reality, they come in plus or minus 5% or so on each one, but we feel like it's a very, very healthy mix for us. I think there's been a trend in the industry to say, let's get away from OTAs. We don't need them. We can do 100% of our bookings in-house. I like the enthusiasm behind that. But I think it's a miss sometimes because what it, we're all better off, especially when kind of circling back to revenue management, we're all better off the more faces and people that our homes are in front of, right? So if that part of that distribution includes third-party distribution through OTAs, They're putting our homes in front of more people. If we've got more lookers and potentially more bookers, that means we can drive rates upward. You know, as challenging as OTAs have been over the years, I'm still a fan, for better or for worse.
I have come around to what you exactly said. In fact, we have a third. Our goal is a third as well, just like yours. So I'm glad to hear we're doing revenue the same and we're doing OTAs the same. So, and you know, I'm really glad you said that about Vrbo. I don't know, Tim, if you have been as deep in the OTA world to understand the change, but is it really only been a year since Jeff was on our program? That was the bowl game.
Isn't it wild? December 30th of 2019.
Yeah. And I feel like he was saying, yeah, we really messed up with Matchback and we're trying to get back in everyone's good graces. And in only 1 year, he has accomplished that with his team.
Yep.
I feel very positive towards Vrbo and not as well to the others. So you can turn it around. So Airbnb, if you're listening, you can turn this around in a year. You just have to put some effort towards it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kudos again to John Suzuki, I think is who you were thinking of, as well as Jeff Hurst, obviously at the top. And specifically, Carmela Gillenwater has done a great job reaching out on behalf of the industry as well. So good on all of them, too. That's two good on yous in this podcast if you're keeping score. Another question while I'm on a roll here, Brian, and that is, how about something you're seeing as a trend in the industry that we should look for maybe in the next 12 months?
I'm going to avoid the obvious because I think we're all sick of talking about COVID. But one of the interesting things that as a side topic that COVID kind of uncovered for us was, I think there's an opportunity for us as an industry, right? Whether it's a local market and our colleagues in a local market or as a greater industry, to spend more time on cooperation and collaboration. Whether we're talking about the regulatory environment that we all find ourselves in, and I know every state's different. Tim, I know you're in a challenging, state with lots of rules. Florida's still the Wild West, you know, and there's everything in between. But I think COVID kind of brought a lot of our community together. And we recognized, one, okay, well, here's an opportunity for us to work on some of these topics, whether it's regulation or whether it's something so simple like we're in a 7-day, Saturday to Saturday market. How awesome would it be to also be able to allow Friday to Friday stays or Sunday to Sunday stays? I know our operations team would love that. You know, we could go, we could have the depth of our cleaning vendors overnight if we could do that. But it's going to take an entire community. Saturday here is just because that's how it's always been. It's going to take an entire community, entire industry for us to be able to take that and start to make a change there. I think some cooperation and collaboration within our industry is going to be the future, right? That's going to make or break us as we go forward.
We're not Saturday to Saturday here, so come on out.
You're lucky.
I never knew that was a thing until a couple years in when I met everyone from the Outer Banks and was like, what? You do what? My last question for you is, how have you sacrificed to build your company?
It's a lot to think about and a quick question. I think it's the obvious. You gotta put your time and attention and your heart and soul and blood, sweat and tears, and you put everything you got in the team, right? The company, your operation, your homeowners, your vendors. It's cliche to say, but they're like family. And growing a business is almost like raising a child. It's some sacrifices here and there to make it happen. But it's one of those things that, you know, over the years, you guys have seen it. It's very, very rewarding. So for all those challenging times, there's something on the other side that's very rewarding. One of the things we've learned recently is in building the team to help get things right on cruise control, if you will, is I guess probably the best term I have for it. It's tempting as starting out in the early days to say, hey, I can do it all myself, and you can, but maybe it's not the right way to set it up for the long term. I would encourage anybody that's starting out or in the midst of growing your operation to grow it for the long term, grow it for sustainability rather than saying, hey, I have to do everything. Trust, get a good team, trust them to do their thing and get it moving in the right direction.
I'm going to give you a switch up on the last one here. Haven't asked anybody this one, Brian, but the vaccine's on the way. We're starting to think about travel again. Where are you going to go when you get the chance and why?
Oh, personal travel? Oh man, we could talk about this all day. It's funny being a beach person, literally with the beach in our backyard. But we are USVI, BVI, Virgin Islands fans. We miss it down there. We will get back down there very soon. The vaccine and everything getting back to normal is going to be interesting. You know, we keep looking at 2021 saying, what's it going to look like? We know it's going to be different than 2020, but it's also going to be different from years leading up to it. And we're just trying to be nimble, probably the best way to put it. There's going to be good and bad to people reaching out and traveling again. We're very much drive to destinations, so we've kind of benefited from some of the uncertainty this year. Will that change? Who knows? We're just trying to stay ahead of it one week at a time. It's hard to plan the entirety of next year.
Where are you going to go, Tim?
Maybe Colorado, if I'm welcome back. Maybe you'll actually come to the Outer Banks one day.
100%.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I haven't seen the ocean in, I can't even remember, 2 years. It's been a while.
I think we're all ready to get out of the house. And speaking of getting out of here, that's what we need to do. Special thanks to Brian Moffitt. I got a lot of takeaways today, Sarah. So, Brian, you landed the plane for us. Great job on being the last of our mini seminar. You got a lot of notes down there too, Sarah?
Yeah, I can't wait to meet you in person. And when I start traveling again, I think I should come to Destin or, 30A. I guess there's lots of places along that highway that I need to go to. But you and I are simpatico, and it was wonderful to meet you on the podcast.
Yeah, likewise. We'd be happy to have you down, first opportunity.
So you can check him out at royaldestinations.com, see all the offerings and the beautiful new website we were talking about that just launched. You can see if your properties would match up. Do they pass the eye test of being able to be on Brian's program? Again, we thank you very much, and we thank you, listeners. We're coming up on the end of the year, Sarah. We got one more before we get into 2021. We got some great stuff in the hopper, ready to roll, and we're going to start to roll that out with our next episode. But again, keep in touch with us. We appreciate all of the contacts. You can find us online, sarahandt.com. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We got our phone number. You can find us. Facebook, of course. Appreciate you as always, and hope you both have a great Christmas that's coming up on us before you know it.
Yeah, and I see a bunch of wreaths behind Brian in his Zoom, and I'd just like to publicly say thank you to Tim. He sent me another Christmas wreath for my house. What a sweetie and a gifter. So thanks so much. Take care, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Sarah and T, Professional Vacation Rental Managers Podcast, brought to you by Sarah Bradford of Winter Park Lodging Company and Steamboat Lodging Company, as well as Tim Cafferty of Outer Banks Blue and Sandbridge Blue Realty Services. Together, Sarah and Tim manage more than 600 privately owned vacation rental properties, and both are regarded as experts in the vacation rental management industry. Music provided by Ben Sound. We encourage your participation on this podcast by sharing it with friends, and please feel free to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Comments or reviews on this particular podcast can be made on their website, sarahandt.com, where you can also subscribe to the podcast as well as provide them feedback on this episode or give them ideas for future topics. We look forward to speaking with you next time on Sarah and T.